on K2I Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Ireland. I'm Kay Puttock, your host for today, together with Joy B. Thanks for listening in.
Thanks for joining us, and welcome to Local Talk Friday. It's going to be a really fun show today. We have quite a variety of topics to cover this hour, from animals to tubas. But it's Friday, so let's start with KHOI municipal reporter Dennis Hart, who brings you a roundup of Central Iowa news of the week from the pages of the Ames Tribune, Associated Local Papers. Take it away, Dennis.
We begin with news from Tuesday's Ames Tribune. The newspaper reported that a U.S. District Court judge has allowed a lawsuit filed by a former Iowa State student against the university to go forward on limited grounds. The student alleges Title IX violations and the mishandling of a sexual assault by the university. Over the summer, a complaint was filed against ISU, the State Board of Regents, and others by the former student, who is from Minnesota. The complaint alleges that the student was sexually assaulted by a member of a fraternity at a Greek residence in 2015. The complaint alleges that the university and others failed to stop members of the university's Greek community from harassing and retaliating against her after she reported the alleged incident. A U.S. district judge dismissed several claims in the lawsuit because they were too vague in general, including one claim that the university should be held accountable for the assault. But the judge ruled there is enough factual content to make the claim that the student's fraternity and sorority peers retaliated against her for reporting the assault, and that university officials were aware of the retaliation and made no effort to stop it. All defendants except for the university were dismissed in the case. The accused man in the case was unable to be found responsible because of insufficient evidence. But the accused student was suspended from the fraternity, and the fraternity house was temporarily shut down and stopped having parties. While the lawsuit does not identify their fraternity, the Tribune has previously reported that in August 2015, Sigma Alpha Epsilon was suspended for a minimum of 4 years. The chapter had its status revoked as a student organization after it was placed on interim suspension in January 2015, following a report of a sexual assault in the fraternity. Also in Tuesday's Trib, word that Iowa State is dropping its appeal efforts after being successfully sued by two students for denying their request to use the university's trademark by their group's marijuana legalization group. The students originally sued the university 3 years ago, alleging that ISU denied them their First and 14th Amendment rights in using ISU logos next to a cannabis leaf. A district court ruled last year that the university violated the First Amendment rights of the students in order to maintain favor with state politicians. Iowa State filed an appeal in federal court last year, claiming the student group would use university trademarks in a way that violates ISU's viewpoint-neutral trademark guidelines. However, the court ruled the group was using the cannabis leaf to promote change in marijuana laws instead of alleged cannabis use, and denied the university's appeal. There was another university-related story in Tuesday's Tribune, one that Iowa State sports fans undoubtedly were happy to read. Football coach Matt Campbell has agreed to a new 6-year contract worth $22.5 million. The deal bumps Campbell's salary from $2.1 million to $3.5 million annually, effective immediately. This comes after Iowa State's football team outperformed expectations this season, winning 7 of its 12 games, including 2 gigantic wins against Oklahoma and TCU, the two teams playing in the Big 12 Conference Championship game tomorrow. Iowa State's winning season means the Cyclones will be going to a bowl game for the first time since 2012. Also in Tuesday's Trib, another story about money, much less money. An Ames man was arrested Monday after police said he stole about $50 from the Ames Public Library Cafe's donation box. 28-year-old Joseph William Idle is charged with third-degree theft. Library staff noticed that the donation money, which is used to fund complimentary tea and coffee, was missing from the box on Sunday. Staff members checked surveillance video and saw a man later identified as Idle take the money from the box and leave. When Idle returned to the library on Monday, the police were called and they picked Idle up. Tuesday's Trib also reported that the trial for 2 Luther residents suing the Whatcha Smokin' Barbecue Plus Brew restaurant has been set for next year. The residents claimed the restaurant was sitting on a piece of land zoned residential and that the business's septic tank is trespassing on their property. And there's more. Tuesday's Tribune also featured an unusual story indeed. It was about a 250-pound deer that crashed through a first-story bedroom window at a West Ames apartment over the weekend. Police were called to the apartment in the 1300 block of Coconino Road with a report of a deer inside. Officers were able to trap the animal in a bathroom before animal control got to the scene. Animal control supervisor Ron Edwards said he was able to look underneath the bathroom door and see the deer thrashing around. Edwards said he could see blood everywhere. He said the deer was breathing heavily, that it had cuts around its legs and torso, and that the animal also had a compound fracture to one of its legs. Edwards said he was able to tranquilize the deer by using an injector pole that fit under the door. Then Edwards said he opened the door and determined the animal was so badly injured that it had to be euthanized on the scene. In Wednesday's Ames Trib, word that the Ames City Council approved a handful of changes to the city's parking system on Tuesday night. That includes rate hikes that will go into effect next July at the earliest. The council voted unanimously to establish meter rates of $1 an hour for two-hour parking, 75 cents an hour for four-hour parking, and 50 cents an hour for 10-hour parking. The council also approved a monthly rental rate of $50 for each reserved parking spot. According to city staff, the increased rates would add up to an extra $573,000, money the city would be able to use to rebuild and improve some of the city's parking lot. Currently, parking rates across the city vary between 25 cents and 50 cents an hour, and monthly rental rates cost $30 or $35. Those rates were established back in 1993. At the same time the council voted to hike parking rates, it also voted to maintain its current parking fine rates. The council also told city staff to start working on establishing a fine ordinance for special events such as Iowa State home football games. In other action, the council voted unanimously to adopt an amendment to the Ames Urban Fringe Plan map, an action that gets about 100 acres of land north of the city ready for annexation. Following the Story County Board of Supervisors and the Gilbert City Council, the Ames Council approved designating that parcel of land urban residential. That land, which is west of George Washington Carver Avenue and south of Cameron School Road, can now be annexed into Ames. A developer wants to build a commercial node in the area along with housing. Also at the council on Tuesday night, Mayor Ann Campbell announced the council would not be taking up the first reading of a potential new low-density rental occupancy ordinance. Because of the time crunch from Thanksgiving, City Attorney Mark Lambert had not had the chance to evaluate how the draft ordinance would affect other parts of the city code. The mayor also said that a petition that's been signed by more than 3,000 Iowa State students contains some misinformation about the city's proposed changes to the rental code. For those reasons, the first reading of the ordinance was postponed until December 12th. Also in Wednesday's trip, the Story County Board of Supervisors received another update on a damaged bridge in the south half of the county on Tuesday. The 280th Street Bridge over the Skunk River, which leads to the Ames Water Pollution Control Facility just east of Interstate 35, has been closed since November 13th, following damage done by what was likely an overloaded vehicle. Repairing the bridge could cost somewhere between $80,000 and $190,000. Repair work could start in about 6 months. If everything goes well, replacing the bridge could cost upwards of $1.5 million, and it would be 18 months or so before replacement work could begin. County engineer Darren Moon told the supervisors that repairs would only extend the life of the bridge for another 10 to 15 years, and repairs would not increase the bridge's load capacity, leaving it vulnerable to what county officials assume broke it in the first place. Board Chairman Rick Sanders said the county has four options: repair the bridge, start the process of replacing it, acquire the land the bridge is on, which is slightly more expensive than replacing the bridge, or working with the City of Ames to turn its private road near the water plant into a public road the county could maintain. Also in Wednesday's Tribune, the suspects involved in the fatal shooting of an Ames man are still at large. 21-year-old Xavier Jordan Shepley died on November 18th after two men wearing ski masks entered a first-floor apartment in West Ames and shot him. Shepley was a 2014 graduate of Ballard High School. In Thursday's Trib, Iowa State University police were investigating the death of a student who was found in his dorm room. Officers were called to Wallace Hall on Tuesday night after the student's roommate found 19-year-old Brendan Numedal unresponsive and not breathing. Numedal was pronounced dead on the scene. ISU police said they did not suspect foul play. Numedal was a freshman in mechanical engineering. Also in Thursday's Trib, members of the Healthy Life Center Steering Committee have updated the Story County Board of Supervisors on some of the conceptual center's details, and said they would welcome potential financial support from the county. The Healthy Life Center is envisioned to be a recreational facility in Ames with opportunities to foster nutritional and social well-being in the community. The City of Ames would be the primary operator, with Heartland having space for an office and an adult daycare center. Ames Parks and Recreation Department Director Keith Abraham said the facility could cost nearly $51 million to build. The city plans to embark on a private fundraising effort and could consider a bond issue as well. The Ames School District has dropped out of the project, electing instead to build its own cold water pool on its own property. Also in Thursday's Trib, plans to redevelop the old Crawford Elementary School into an apartment complex for residents 55 and older are still on track. The City Council has approved amending the city's land use plan to make the former school property eligible for apartments and passed the first reading of a rezoning ordinance that would make the property residential. The school at 415 Stanton Avenue was completed in 1930 and held the Ames School District's administrative offices after it closed. The school board agreed to sell the school to RES Development earlier this year, and the developers have moved ahead with plans for 55 and older housing. Construction on the new living facility could be finished by next year or early 2019. Also in Thursday's Trib, good news for moviegoers. The North Grand Cinema will open its doors to the public today. The theater, with its five showing rooms, is the first major addition to North Grand Mall after developers bought it last year. It It replaces the North Grand 5, which was a second-run theater that closed in 2014. The new theater's five showing rooms have leather recliner seats and new sound insulation. Each room can seat 88 people. The theater lobby has been repainted and has a hand-painted mural, a full bar, a kitchen, and a concession stand. Customers who come in today will be able to buy popcorn and candy, but the rest of the food menu won't be available yet because the kitchen is not quite ready. One more note from Thursday's trip. Iowa State University student government has approved a request for $190,000 to fund a big entertainment event at the university next spring. The Student Senate approved funding a 12,000-attendee concert-style event to be held on a Sunday afternoon. Those in favor said it would help bring a sense of tradition back to ISU since Visha was suspended 3 years ago after a riot broke out. In this week's Nevada Journal, a report on Monday's Nevada City Council meeting, where the council approved moving forward with an appointment to fill the at-large seat that will be vacated when Brett Barker moves from being a city councilman to mayor. Current Mayor Lynn Lathrop will set up a committee that will look over and possibly interview candidates before bringing a recommendation back to the city council. The city has already received a handful of nominations. The public could still petition for an election by filing paperwork within the 14-day time frame that exists following the public announcement about the council's intentions. Also at the council meeting, the council approved a second reading and then waived a third reading to establish a loading and unloading zone for passengers on the west side of the elementary school along 9th Street. On another matter, Mayor Lathrop said the committee that determines what amounts will be given to groups that ask for financial assistance from the city has decided that 75% of the funding will go to charities and 25% will go to service groups and other organizations that have the ability to raise money on their own. It was also announced that a stormwater collection line project would start this week along South 12th, South J, South 13th, and South K in the southeast part of Nevada. And Parks Director Tim Hansen said that his staff helped package food baskets for 200 families and individuals in Nevada who needed assistance during Thanksgiving week, and that Parks and Rec served its annual Thanksgiving dinner for seniors. 115 seniors came for the sit-down meal, and other meals were delivered to those who could not leave their homes. In this week's Boone News, Republican Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds announced a gift to the Boone High School Workforce Development class on Tuesday. The governor said AT&T would donate $100,000 to the program as part of a larger $3.5 million donation to similar programs nationwide that prepare at-risk students for careers after graduation. The gift will be split between schools in Boone, Iowa City, Eldridge, and Waterloo. Boone High's principal said its part of the money will be used to hire a vocational teacher for the program for a 2-year period. The district will raise money to keep the position funded after the grant runs out. Also in the news, Republican, the Boone Community School District held a special meeting this week. At that session, expectations for the professional dress code of teachers were discussed, and the district superintendent will bring back suggestions to the board in January. The board also discussed the language in the district's drug policy and decided to keep in place the policy that says students in possession of drugs or selling drugs in school will be recommended for expulsion. Also in the news, Republican, the Boone County Board of Supervisors did not take any action during its last meeting on a request from Community and Family Resources, which is headquartered in Fort Dodge. Representatives of CFR asked for possible funding to help contribute to the construction of a new facility for the group, which helps people recover from addiction and mental illness. The new building would be located in Fort Dodge, but would serve Boone County residents as well. The cost of the new building is estimated at about $6.5 million. Also in the news, Republican, word that even though the Mamie Eisenhower birthplace has closed its doors for now, there are plans for a new Mamie Eisenhower exhibit within the Boone History Center. The new exhibit, which could open by May of next year, will be a year-round display instead of the seasonal displays at the birthplace. In this week's Story City Herald, word that the Roland Public Library, which serves Roland, Story City and surrounding areas, will hold an open house tomorrow, Saturday, from 5 to 6:30 p.m. to show off its completed backroom renovation. The open house will feature visits and photos with Santa and Mrs. Claus, cookie decorating, holiday crafts, coffee, and refreshments. The $122,000 project transformed a large, unfinished back room that was being used for storage. The library first opened its doors 34 years ago, but by 2010, it had outgrown its space. So the library moved to a bigger building at 221 West Main, a building that gave it more space with an additional back room that could be used for future growth. And that's just what happened. The remodeling project has enlarged the library's usable area by an additional 1,200 square feet. Also in the Herald, Story City's American Legion Unit No. 59 is collecting items to be donated to veterans at the VA hospital in Des Moines. Among the items being collected, large and extra-large underwear, T-shirts, sweatshirts, and sweatpants. Donations can be placed in labeled boxes inside the entry area at the Legion building in Story City during December. And there you have it. That's a look at what made news in and around Ames on this very busy week for news.
This is Local Talk on KHOI. I'm one of your hosts, Joy B, along with Kay Putta. And that was a roundup of this week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune, brought to you by Ames Municipal Reporter Dennis Hart. ¶¶ Ames Tuba Christmas is coming this weekend and will happen at the United Methodist Church at Kellogg and 6th Street on Saturday at 11 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. Michael Galamo, professor of music and director of bands at Iowa State University, is here to explain Tuba Christmas.
Tuba Christmas is the heavy metal event of the year. This is actually the 44th annual Tuba Christmas. Somebody started this 44 years ago, a guy by the name of Harvey Phillips, who taught tuba at the University of Indiana, and he thought it would be fun to get tuba players and euphonium, which are miniature tuba players, together, play Christmas carols, and it really caught on. And there's something about the warmth, the beautiful low sound of the tuba and the baritones. This thing has just really taken off, and whereas they had one of these 44 years ago, now this year there'll probably be about 250 tuba Christmas events around the world. There's a national website, and you can see by state where all of these events are going to be. So if you play tuba, you can do our event in Ames, and then the week after, there's a Tuba Christmas event down in Des Moines. You know, there's a lot of these people that like to do a lot of them that just kind of follow these. This will be our 8th annual, and when we started this 8 years ago, we had about 45 tuba players. We now get over 100 tuba players to show up. You know, nothing we do is going to be very fast because we've got 100 tuba players, so nothing's going to be, you know, very technical. We're playing Christmas carols, and so they're very playable. And to hear the sound and to see this event, it is just a riot. And we also ask all of the players to not only dress festively, but to decorate their instruments. So they put Christmas lights and garland and antlers on their tubas. And then we have awards for the musicians, who's driven the farthest and the most decorated tuba.
Where has the farthest Tuba Christmas
Last band? Year, somebody flew in, I think, from Germany. It's absolutely crazy, and it is such a fun time. You'll leave, and you will just have a good time. Everybody puts their own spin on it. What we also do when we perform is we have two big video screens. We do this at the First United Methodist Church, and they have, you know, big video screens. We put all the lyrics up there, so we'll play through a Christmas carol the first time with just the tuba players, and then the second time we invite people to sing along. And in between the selections, the narrator gives some background on all of the Christmas pieces. It is just terrific. It just fills up the place.
So are you conducting?
Yes, I will be conducting. I serve as the conductor and the coordinator, and we've always had a guest conductor, Natalie Royston, who's in charge of the music education department at Iowa State. She's a former director of the Cyclone Marching Band. She'll be our guest conductor this year, and I think she's done that all 8 years that we've had this. Some years we've had a solo tuba player. I don't know if we'll have that this year. Christian Kerkner, who teaches tuba at Iowa State, has done that for us at some point. And, you know, we'll probably have over 100 tuba players for our concerts this year. I mean, we'll have tuba players dressed as Santa, and it is just a riot. It is a guaranteed good time. It's family friendly. We have an MC, and we have a lot of tuba humor and a lot of musician humor.
There's
lots of tuba humor. How do you fix a broken tuba? The tuba glue. Tuba spelled backwards is a butt. So there's just lots of, and it goes from there. And we packed the place. Last year was the first year that we decided we had to go to two concerts because it was standing room only. We had people standing outside the sanctuary at the First United Methodist Church, which is a very large church. Mm-hmm. And we've got to do two shows just because we can't pack everybody into the first performance. And that's a wonderful problem to have.
So how do people get involved, and then how do you coordinate the music and everything that's going on?
There's got to be a rehearsal, and which we do just prior to the event. And we've got a great website. If you go to amestubachristmas.com, you'll find us. Or if you go to the national website, and then they have information about our event, and then there's a link to our website. The players show up early. I believe they show up at 8:30 in the morning, something like that, and they register, so they have to sign up. And they actually have to pay, and most of that goes to the national organization. It's tax deductible for the players. We keep some of that to help cover some of our expenses. We hope to break even each year that we do this. And then after the registration, we do about a 40-minute rehearsal. So we play through everything so everybody understands kind of what we're doing. We have our announcer there so he understands what his role is. And then we have a person who runs our slideshow with the lyrics and all of that kind of information during the performance as well. It's a very unique experience, and it's a lot of fun.
So how many cities in Iowa?
I think there's probably probably, I'd have to go on the website. There's probably about a dozen. Usually there's about 8 to 12. I know they've done these up at Clear Lake and Mason City and Des Moines, probably one over in Iowa City, and Cedar Rapids I know does one. So they're all over the place, and it just takes somebody to get it started, which I've done here. You know, I used to teach at the University of Akron in Ohio, and the tuba teacher there, a guy named Tucker Jolly, which is a great name. But Tucker's been doing this probably at Akron for 20 years. They have over 400 tuba players show up, and they do this in what would be their equivalent of Stevens Auditorium. They have to do two shows at like Stevens because there's that many people that come to attend this event. It's just huge.
So you're a busy man, Mike. Why do you do this?
Just because it's a lot of fun. It's something fun for the community. I do the municipal band here in the summers, and it's just an opportunity to bring a different type of music to Ames, and something that's fun to do, and it is absolutely a riot. It is a good time. Something I'll mention is Mayor Ann Campbell has just proclaimed Saturday, December 9th, the day of our performance, as Tuba Christmas Day in our fair city of Ames. And she's done that for us every year that we've had the event. And she provided comments. She was with us 2 years ago. And she said, you know, when Mike started this the first year, I kind of thought he was nuts. So, and she says, now this thing has taken off. And it is really kind of a neat tradition here in Ames.
So this seems like a passion for you. Since the listeners can't see your face, and I can, you've been smiling from ear to ear
it's
for
great.
Most of this interview.
It's a special day every year. Okay. Yeah, December, and again, this is December 9th, and we have two shows. We're doing 11 o'clock and 1:30 p.m. It's the First United Methodist Church, which is right across from the downtown post office here on Kellogg. Players have to get there early, so if you're interested in participating as a player, just go to our website and all that information is there. But everybody else shows at 11 and 1:30. They're family-friendly. We have lots of little kids there. When we do things like Jingle Bells, we pass out sleigh bells and have them, you know, help us and do all of that.
So audience participation.
There you go. Audience participation. And the website, aimstubachristmas.com. Everything is there. We have we had talked about the awards for the players. North Grand Mall and North Grand Cinema are giving movie tickets out as pairs of movie tickets to all of our award winners. And I'd like to recognize the Lincoln Center Hy-Vee. They always provide bottled water and juice and donuts for the tuba players.
What's the last day that people can register for Tuba Christmas?
Show up at registration. And really, you can on our website, there's a registration form that you fill out. But you can't register in advance. You have to show up that morning with the registration form and tuba. You know, tuba and euphonium, and you're in. This is on Saturday, December 9th. And, again, shows at 11 and 1:30. And I think registration starts at 8:30 in the morning. But, again, our website has great information. And this is our eighth annual. This is becoming a big deal in Ames. We are indebted to the people with the First United Methodist Church and the senior pastor there, Fred Lewis, who help us and allow us to do this in their beautiful church.
Yeah, and then the ages, you say, range from
Range from 10, 11 years old to the last couple of years, Roger Anderson, who's a local tuba player, has gotten the oldest. Roger, I think, is in his mid-80s, late 80s, mm-hmm. something like that. I hope that's right, Roger. I just saw him a couple of weeks ago, and I think he's planning to be with us again for the event and everything in between. We get college students. We get high school students, people from the community, people from Ames, people from the Muni Band, and anybody who can get access to a tuba or a baritone.
So there's maybe a lot of people that miss being in the marching bands and,
sure,
in
yeah.
high school and
yes,
college
yeah.
that come back to
yeah.
this event.
Yeah, and if you need to borrow a tuba or a baritone, contact me because we can probably loan you one for the day. We do that a lot, too.
Nice.
And we have, you know, the marching baritones. We have a person who comes every year with a double bell euphonium, which is really a cool instrument. And sousaphones, they decorate sousaphones and tubas and the fiberglass tubas, the white ones, we call those the Tupperware tubas. So we get everything. No trombones, no trumpets, no. But if you play trumpet or trombone, you could probably play baritone or tuba, especially with trumpet because they have a book in treble clef, so trumpet players can use trumpet fingerings and play on a baritone for that. So that's, baritone musicians can read either bass clef or treble clef, which is transposed the same way trumpet players play. So trumpet players can do this very easily.
So why is it just tubas? Why don't they include other instruments?
That's what they started. And it's just something unique with the sound. It's this big pipe organ kind of sound, and it's all low, and it is very unique. And the person who started this, we mentioned Harvey Phillips, who taught at the University of Iowa. He started this event in recognition of his teacher, a very famous tuba player named Bill Bell, who played with the New York Philharmonic and the New York Studio Orchestra for decades and decades, and I think Bill Bell played with the Sousa Band. And Bill Bell was born in Perry, Iowa. And every year there's a big event in Perry at the gravesite of Bill Bell, which is where he's buried to this day. And he was probably one of the most prominent tuba players that has ever lived. And he's from right here in Perry, Iowa.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Joy. And Tuba Christmas, Saturday, December 9th, shows at 11 and 1:30 at the First United Methodist Church.
Just joined us. This is Local Talk on KJY Radio. I'm one of your hosts for this hour, Kay Potok, together with my co-host, Joy B. The Story County Animal and Control Shelter is having a major adoption event today and tomorrow. If you've been thinking of adopting a pet, they have a good variety available, including over 180 cats and kittens. And they have big and little puppies and dogs. The cats and dogs have all been neutered, and they've had their shots. Also up for adoption, there's a bearded dragon, which is, I've never heard of that, but apparently it's a type of lizard. A ball python, some pet rats and guinea pigs, and rabbits. The chickens are all gone. I guess chickens are popular. Story County has a 99% adoption rate, and they aim to keep that, their success rate. When you go to the adoption event, you'll also be able to enjoy snacks and giveaways. The Story County Animal Control and Shelter is located at 975 Lincoln Way on the western edge of Nevada. Adoption today will be from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. and on Saturday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Earlier in the show, Dennis Hart related that last week a 250-pound deer crashed through the window of an apartment in West Ames. Ames Animal Control Supervisor Ron Edwards came by at our request to elaborate on this unusual event. Welcome, Mr. Edwards. Please tell us what happened.
Thanks. Well, great. Thank you for having me this morning. I really appreciate the time. Well, we got a call from, actually a call was made into 911 through the Ames Police Department. We are a division in the police department, so they contacted us right away. Police officers initially responded and found that the deer had busted through a bedroom window. And had actually made its way to the bathroom, which is just off of the bedroom in the home. Obviously, there was a very frightened person at home. It was a nice lady that was very scared and didn't know what
to
do.
They weren't in bed at the time, were they?
They were not. they were not. It was in the middle of the afternoon, and luckily they were not taking a nap, a cat nap, as they call it. So she immediately called 911 and got them to come out there and see what they could do to try to figure out how we get the deer out of the bathroom.
So why did the buck do this?
Well, we believe what's happening, this is the period of the year where it's the breeding season. It's called the rut. And the deer probably saw his reflection in the window and thought it was another male deer that was trying to approach his territory and his does. And again, with the breeding season, they're very active. They do want to protect their group. So he probably saw a threatening male looking at him through the window. And of course, we know that it was him. So he probably charged at it and to get it to leave the area and busted through the window.
Hmm. Yeah, and the window was kind of high up. It was, must have had to make a big jump.
Yeah, he did. I think, again, because he saw the reflection up a little bit high. And actually, when he stood up, he would have been pretty tall, too. So it is a tall window, but he also was a really big buck.
Oh. Yeah, 250 pounds, and he had a big rack, I believe.
He only had half a rack, actually.
Okay.
The other part, look at it. It appeared to have broken off at some point earlier in the year. It was a clean break that definitely happened sometime prior to this incident. So he
so
only
been
had
fighting before, maybe.
Probably. Yeah, and it could have even, you know, who knows what he may have run into or something. But it was very obvious. It was just he only had half the side there.
Mm-hmm. Is this very common, this kind of thing?
Well, there is definitely increased activity at this time of the year, but jumping through windows is definitely not that common.
Thank goodness.
Yes, that's very important that it doesn't happen too often. There was an incident about 5 years ago prior to me arriving at the Ames Animal Shelter and Animal Control where I did bust into a home. So it has happened in the past, but it's not just something that happens very often, which is a really good thing because that's a very dangerous situation with an animal that's that large and having, you know, even if he just has half of his antlers, that half antlers, there were 7 points that could have done a lot of damage and it could have been fatal.
Right. So there's this buck running around someone's house and they call, but meanwhile, the deer was running around their house. So how did they handle this?
Well, it fortunately, it just stayed in the bedroom, bathroom area. So it kind of was isolated to a certain part of their apartment.
And they shut
there.
It in there, presumably.
Yeah, and the police officers, when they arrived, they were able to shut that door. They arrived before I did. And when I arrived, I was able to look under the door. There was about a little bit less than an inch gap. So I was able to see the deer and not make a real close determination on exactly how big it was. I knew it was big, but not 250 pounds big. And I was able to see that he had been thrashing around. There was lots of blood. He's lost a lot of blood. Mm-hmm. And I was able to see some of the injuries from the window and the glass. So at that point, what I needed to do was to tranquilize it, to further assess the situation, determine exactly what the extent of the injuries are. If it was something superficial, then we could have, got him out of the apartment, let him wake up from the tranquilizer, and send him on his way. Unfortunately, he did have a compound fracture. There was bone exposed in one of his legs. And that's from thrashing around probably and just busted one of his legs. So at that point, we determined that he was suffering. And the last thing, of course, that we want to happen is for an animal to suffer. So we did make the determination that the most humane thing to do was to euthanize it there on the scene.
Mm-hmm. So the legs can't be mended?
No.
It's like horses, maybe.
No, yeah, they really can't. And because it is a wild animal, too, it's a lot different than a dog where you can control their activity and behavior a little bit. With a wild animal, they just want to get away. They don't want to be held in a captive, confined area, especially a guy like this. I mean, it was a big buck. He was definitely older. So he had been wild for, his entire life. Right. So trying to confine him to a small area to treat him would not be a kind thing to do to him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't running away from the hunters. He was just looking at his reflection.
He was looking at his reflection. I wish I could make it more dramatic and make it sound like he was really doing something, protecting.
That is pretty dramatic, actually.
Yes, yeah.
I woke up and saw that deer in my house, I would wonder for a second if I was dreaming.
No, yeah. They weren't asleep. This was the day.
Yeah.
So this isn't very common, though. And then they had to remove this dead deer, of course.
Correct. Yeah, after we euthanized it, we did remove it. And because it's euthanized and even tranquilized, it's not something that we can just throw out and allow other, wild animals to eat. Because it has the drugs in it, we don't want to take the chance that an eagle or something is
right.
going to eat the meat and could have, it could be a deadly effect on the animal. So we did have to take the animal to the incinerator and have it incinerated.
Hmm. So it was a sad end for that.
So what other wildlife encounters happen at this time of year?
Well, all throughout the year, we have a lot of wildlife encounters from raccoons to possums, occasionally beaver. Get reports of them. Not too common, though, but definitely raccoons are probably the most common that we see. They're coming into warmer spaces. They're climbing into attics. They're going through trees, getting up in trees and into attics and trying to get in the home where it's a little bit warmer. And so that's why it's just really important to make sure that your house is protected and these animals are not getting inside.
They're pretty big, too. I had some raccoons that came out of a gutter. And I ran back inside. They were huge.
Yeah, they can be really big, and they're very powerful and destructive. They can manipulate their hands and really just, they can tear the siding off your house to get into it. So you just got to be really careful with them. And they can be really dangerous. So as with all wild animals, the best thing to do is to leave it alone, let it go on its way, and call the professionals if you need help with it.
Talking of animals getting into your house, is there any way to keep mice out of your house at this time of year?
You know, it's such an ongoing problem. Of course, when the weather starts turning, they're coming in looking for warmth as well. You know, they can squeeze into the smallest of spaces and get through. You wouldn't think that something can squeeze in a small space, but even just that, you know, quarter inch underneath your door, if you have any kind of gap whatsoever, they can squeeze in that. But same thing with them, making sure that your vents on your house, up in your attic, or that those are completely closed off and you have that hard wire mesh that's on there. Because, again, you know, if a raccoon tries to get in there and bends it back some, that opens up a door and place for mice to get in there. And, you know, and just like all other animals, they're looking for a warm place to be for the winter.
And a food source.
And a food source, absolutely. And a place to have their young. So they want to continue to make sure that there's enough mice around, which, of course, there is.
Now, you mentioned beavers. I heard that because it's been a dry year, beavers are going a bit wild trying to enlarge their dams and cutting down a lot of trees. Have you come across that?
We have had some recent reports. You know, what we work with the Public Works Department, and they will destroy the dams, hopefully to get the beavers to move, you know, downstream and out of our area. But it, again, it's going to be someone else's problem. So, you know, there's always going to be ongoing issues. It's been several years since we've had a significant problem with beaver, but it seems like recently we've had just some recent calls of them, and they will destroy trees. They will absolutely destroy.
Yeah, they sometimes go a bit wild with cutting down trees.
Yeah. You know, putting metal around wire mesh around the trees at the base usually will solve that problem. They're going to move on to an easier target. You know, there are things, lots of information on lots of different websites on how to best control that and deal with them, because they can definitely be destructive in your property. And, you know, not just destroying the trees, which is very sad, but the dams that they build and flooding yards and things like that. So they can be destructive, and it is important to try to keep them moving along.
Well, that brings me to the next question. You're talking about how to control beavers. Are there any general tips about animals that people should keep in mind?
Well, one of the things with wild animals that you always have to think is that they are looking for food sources. They want to feed their family. They want to feed themselves. So if you're feeding birds and you have the best of intentions to feed the birds and maybe even feed the squirrels, that attracts other animals too. So just because you have bird seed out there doesn't mean the raccoons or the possums or other kind of critters, muskrats, are not going to be attracted to that. So, you know, not leaving pet food outside. Those are all things, making sure your trash cans are secured. They have lids on them that can't be easily, because raccoons can, again, with their hands, they can manipulate things and they can open up things. So you want to make sure it's a nice, secure lid on the trash can. So not providing them those, you know, resources and food, intentionally or unintentionally, all helps to control the wildlife population somewhat and kind of keep them out of your area. You know, we have just a plethora of wildlife here in Ames and surrounding communities, and we're never going to get rid of all of them. And quite honestly, there's a lot of benefits to a lot of the wildlife that we have here. So I don't think we want to get rid of all of them. Yeah. Some people do, of course. They don't want to see anything like that. But, you know, they want to feed the beautiful birds, but they don't realize that that's bringing possums around that are eating the the stuff on the ground from the birds.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Edwards, for coming by.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Okay. We've been hearing from Ron Edwards about human and wildlife encounters this time of year, and particularly the recent incident when a deer leapt into an Ames resident's apartment. Thanks again for coming by, Mr. Edwards.
Thank you. Time can do so much.
have just joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I am Joy B., one of your hosts, together with Kay Paduk and Susan Wiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, has joined us to bring you First Friday City News.
Welcome, Susan.
Good morning. It's good to be here. So once again, December, it's a beginning of a great new month. We have a lot of things going on at City Hall and throughout the community that I thought I could bring to your attention. I think everybody remembers we had an election in November. And with our election, we have some new city council, a new city council member, and a new mayor. So this is a kind of a big change for Ames. We've had Mayor Ann Campbell serving for 12 years, and her term will end at the end of this month. So kind of the end of an era.
So maybe you should tell everybody who the new mayor is.
So, well, I hope everybody knows by now that John Hala has been elected as the new mayor of Ames. We will be swearing in the new mayor and our new council member, David Martin, who will be replacing Peter Erasm. And also we'll be swearing in incumbent council members Gloria Betcher and Amber Corrieri, who both ran unopposed. So we have two ceremonies set up for the swearing-in. Swearing-in ceremonies are public events, so people are welcome to attend if they wanted to see the process. A judge comes in, and it's a relatively brief ceremony, and then there's a little reception afterwards. Due to some scheduling conflicts, we have the first swearing-in coming up at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, December 19th in the City Council chambers. And that, like I said, will be David Martin's swearing in. And then the next swearing in will be 10 a.m. Tuesday, January 2nd, 2018, in the council chambers at 10 a.m. And that will be for...
The 22nd, did you say? No.
January 2nd. January 2nd. That will be for our new mayor, John Hala, along with the incumbents, Amber Corrieri and Gloria Betcher.
Okay.
So... it's kind of fun to see that sort of a changing of the guard, and then all the new terms start with the beginning of the new year. But to recognize our outgoing council for their hard work, so to recognize the mayor and Peter Erasm, we have a farewell reception planned, and that is also coming up. So please mark your calendars for 3 to 6 p.m. on Friday, December 15th at the Ames Public Library. In the Farwell T. Brown Auditorium, we will be hosting a thank you and farewell ceremony for Mayor Ann Campbell and outgoing City Council member Peter Erasm. And it's open to the public. It's kind of a come-and-go open house. At this point, we don't have a program scheduled, so we have a three-hour time frame for anybody to come and give their thanks. We have a lot of years of service. Prior to serving for 12 years as mayor, Ann Campbell had served as a member of the City Council for four terms or 16 years, so a combined 28 years of service to the citizens of Ames. It's pretty phenomenal. According to our research, her three consecutive terms as mayor would suggest that she is the longest consecutively serving mayor in Ames history.
Wow.
We do have Parley Sheldon, who served four terms, but not all together. So it was kind of a big deal, and I really am optimistic we'll have a very large turnout to recognize all the efforts.
So when you say come and go, does that mean shake hands and take a picture? Refreshments?
Absolutely. There'll be refreshments there, mingle, come and talk, say thank you. But there won't be seating or for a presentation. There will be seating, of course. But there will be no formal presentation, so people won't have to worry about getting there at a certain time. It gives them a longer window.
So the reception for the outgoing people is a little more less formal
than
the...
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, switching gears, just a reminder, as we kind of wrap up fall, our last Yard Waste Free Day is tomorrow, Saturday, December 2nd, the final Yard Waste Free Day of the fall. We have four of those, and we'll wrap up tomorrow, Saturday, December 2nd, with free yard waste disposal from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Chemnitz Technology. This is on Friel in East Ames. It is a different site. We've been at this site for a couple years now, but I think people still think it's the South Ames site. Nope, you have to remember to go out on East Lincoln Way. past the resource recovery plant, 400 Friel Drive.
So they bag up their waste and burn it?
Yes, you can bag it up in disposable in paper bags, or if you bring your leaves in plastic, you can dump them and take your bags with you. So I've heard it's faster if you put them in the paper bags, that you can just throw them and go. But I also know that some people buy very heavy-duty plastic bags and they want them back. So they can shake the leaves out, take the bags, and be on their way.
They shouldn't leave the bags, the plastic bags.
No, you can't just throw the plastics.
Yeah, because Chamness, he makes compost out of all this.
Right, absolutely. Right. And there are some
compostable.
That's the word, plastic. But they're kind of hard to get a hold of. So I would stick with either your paper, your brown paper bags, or take your plastic bags back. Mm-hmm. Well, let's see. What else do we have? Well, as part of our new mayor, John Hala, coming on board, he was a member of the transit board before he sought becoming mayor. So as he becomes mayor, he leaves a vacancy in the transit board. As we move into the beginning of a new year, 2018, we will be seeking volunteers not only for the transit board, but for many of our city boards and commissions. This is the time that we put out the number of vacancies. We do know that several people that volunteer on a city board or commission may be reappointed, but we don't always know what their plans are, so we have to plan for the idea that there may be multiple vacancies. So in addition to looking for a specific volunteer to fill the open position on the transit board, that application is actually due today.
Huh.
If you miss that, go ahead and fill out an application, because we have many other boards that will have vacancies. And maybe you have an interest in something else, perhaps Parks and Recreation, Library, Public Art. There are just dozens of boards and commissions that people can volunteer their time for.
So and what's the website they should look at?
Absolutely. They should go on the City of Ames website, cityofames.org, under the clerk. Look under City Clerk for Boards and Commissions. There's an online application. You can print out the application, fill it out. You can go to the clerk's office at City Hall and get an application. You can call the clerk's office. They will mail you an application. So lots of ways to get involved. And I think what a great New Year's resolution, perhaps, to be maybe consider doing a little bit more volunteer work.
Now, for this position that's come vacant because of the new mayor leaving on transit, but what kind of skills and experience does that person need?
Well, obviously an interest in the bus system.
Mm-hmm.
And SkyRide is undergoing a huge redesign project right now, where they have grown just exponentially. They went from about 4 million rides a year to their current 7 million rides per year ridership. And yet they say they're using sort of the same system that they've always used. They've just put more buses out, so they drive the same routes. And for the last year, they've been collecting data and looking at ways to improve services. And so they're going to roll out a new system in 2018. So this would be a very exciting time to be on the transit board. So that's just one of the many, many volunteer opportunities.
So for sort of helping to form that you need someone that would help to organize that new system?
No, we just need somebody that has an interest in public transit and in getting feedback on how people like the new system, tweaking the new system. It's been a work in progress by that point for almost 2 years. So they have a consultant that has been working on the design. They've been seeking public inputs over the last year multiple ways. One of the concerns right now with SkyRide is that when the transit program started, it always has had a very, very strong university base and a student use. Over the years, it's become more student ridership and less public permanent resident ridership.
Mm-hmm.
So when SkyRide first sort of grew in popularity, 88% say were students. Now we're creeping into the low 90% of student use. SkyRide would like to see that level off again, to see more community usage. This is a community asset. And right. So why don't I take SkyRide, or you? Why don't you take SkyRide more often? So finding out what are those barriers.
Yeah, they need more shelters.
Shelters would
That's one thing. But I was going to say, it's really important on something like that, a board. I was on a transit board in Iowa City, to have people that do ride the bus a lot, to give input and be on board. So can you tell us about the SunSmart Ames real quick?
So SunSmart Ames, I know that I've been on here before with our electric services director, Donald Kahm. It is a new project. It is a grassroots effort to bring solar to Ames. And from that interest in a community solar project, we have been working, the electric services has been working with a consultant to develop a model for a community solar farm that would be give customers the opportunity to buy in. And so we are in the process now of allowing people to purchase a percentage of energy produced by the solar farm through a product that we call a power pack. And for we don't have the exact cost because we're still working out the details, but for less than we know it's now less than $350, you can purchase a power pack, which would supply about 2.5% of your home's energy over the course of the year. And by purchasing a power pack, you have invested in community solar, and you will end up getting a credit on your bill for 20 years. It's a very small credit, a very small monthly credit, representing your 2.5% of electricity mm-hmm. produced by the farm.
The community and you can buy more than one.
You absolutely can buy more than one. And we have had definite interest of people interested in buying 3, 6, 10. I think it's been maybe the most individual units I've seen purchased. And then we have been offering it now to businesses mm-hmm. to offset. Maybe they want to offset their carbon footprint a little bit and they want to add that solar component. So it's been very well received. We need to sell about 80% of the investment of the cost of the project before we can start. And at this point, we've gotten about a third of them sold. So we really need to ramp it up, and we thought it would be a great opportunity for during the season of giving to consider purchasing a power pack as a holiday gift idea.
Uh-huh. Now, these if people buy a power pack, it stays with the house or the business or what? With the physical structure.
It does. If you ended up relocating outside of Ames, there would be a buyback schedule, a depreciated buyback schedule where you could sell your product back to your power pack back to the electric services. If you moved within Ames, you could actually transfer that.
Oh, okay.
So,
or you could leave it with the house.
And you could leave it with the house as a selling feature.
Mm-hmm.
So,
or a gift to the new owner.
You could add, actually, make them pay for you could gift it to somebody else you knew who was an Ames Electric Services customer. So,
It looks almost as if we're running out of time here. Well, we are running out of time. Do you want to quickly say something about holiday closings or snow?
Absolutely. The city of Ames will – most city departments, obviously our fire and police departments do not close, but most city offices will close for Christmas on Monday, December 25th, and will also be closed on Tuesday, December 26th. Additionally, city offices will be closed on Monday, January 1st for the new year.
Okay, so, well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you. It's been great to be here.
We've been hearing from Susan Guiaz, the Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. Thank you, Susan, for coming in to bring First Friday City News. You got any last words?
Oh, just have a great day, everybody.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've been your hosts today, Joy B. and Kate Puttock. Earlier in the hour, Dennis Hart providing a summary of news around Central Iowa from the pages of the Ames Tribune and associated newspapers. We also heard from Michael Guillermo, professor of music and director of bands at Iowa State University, and Ames Animal Control Supervisor Ron Edward.
Today's show was engineered by Jackie. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also, remember, you can also hear it online at khoifm.org and find the links to the guests and information you heard during the program. That'll take a day or so, but it'll be up before long. KHOI is streaming live on khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. And come and join the Local Talk team. Remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.